Hi, this is Joe Ziemba, and I host the podcast When Football Was Football here on the Sports History Network. I'm also the author of the recent book, Bears vs. Cardinals, the NFL's Oldest Rivalry. These two clubs first met in 1920 and will be renewing that rivalry again this year on December 24th in Chicago. In honor of that occasion, I'm very pleased to announce that the Sports History Network will be offering two free copies of my book to its listeners. To qualify for this great gridiron giveaway, just go to the link at sportshistorynetwork.com/Christmas 2023. That's sportshistorynetwork.com/Christmas 2023. Please enter by the closing date of December 15th so that we have enough time to contact you for a personal inscription of the book, and then ship the book to you for arrival prior to December 25th. And as always, thank you for listening to the Sports History Network, and good luck.
You can tell by our recent episodes that we are getting in the sweet spot of Super Bowl history. And in today's episode, covering January 25th, we get to talk about three Super Bowls that were played on this date. We're going to talk about them all and more in just a moment.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Aaron Hayes, and we're broadcasting from the Pig Pen in Western Pennsylvania to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines. Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome once again to the Pigpen, where we will talk about the football history headlines for January 25th. We are getting closer and closer to this year's Super Bowl, and as we do, we're going through history and talking about all the past Super Bowls, and we have over 50 of them to discuss, and we're getting more and more by the day. And today we're going to talk about three. The first one took place on January 25th, 1981, at the Louisiana Superdome in New Orleans. The Philadelphia Eagles and the Oakland Raiders squared off against each other in Super Bowl 15. Both teams had great stories coming into the contest. The American Football Fandom site has an insightful article on the game and these stories leading up to it. In the week leading up to the game, President Ronald Reagan was sworn in and the Iran hostage crisis had just ended. In light of those recent events, there was a definite patriotic vibe to the events of the venue itself as the pregame ceremonies honored the end of the crisis. The Raiders were playing in the franchise's third Super Bowl and had beaten the Oilers, Browns, and Chargers in the playoffs to win the AFC from the wild card position. The Eagles were playing in their first Super Bowl under a young head coach with a style new to the NFL in Dick Vermeil. The Raiders, guided by quarterback Jim Plunkett, jumped out to an early 14-0 lead, and the Eagles were ill-equipped to recover from it. And when they did try, the Raiders linebacker Rod Martin picked off Philadelphia quarterback Ron Jaworski three times for a Super Bowl record. The Oakland Raiders defeated the Philadelphia Eagles 27-10. Jim Plunkett was voted as the MVP of the game after completing 13 of 21 passes for 261 yards and three touchdowns. Plunkett was a second Heisman winner after Roger Staubach to be named a Super Bowl MVP, and the Raiders were the first franchise to win it all from the wildcard spot. Well, if you like that Super Bowl news, let's talk about another one. January 25th, 1987, at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California. Super Bowl 21 was played between the Denver Broncos and the New York Giants, per a Newsday article from the day after the game. Broncos quarterback John Elway was under siege all day from a Giant defense that featured the likes of Harry Carson, Leonard Marshall, and Lawrence Taylor. In fact, he was sacked four times in a game, and one was for a safety in the second quarter. Phil Simms, the Giants quarterback, on the other hand, completed 22 of 25 passes, pretty amazing right there, for 268 yards and 3 touchdowns, and was named the game's MVP as the Giants defeated the Denver Broncos 39-20. One of the greatest scenes from the postgame was when New York franchise owner Wellington Mara was handing the Lombardi Trophy to coach Bill Parcells in jubilation of the Giants' first Super Bowl victory. Okay, they always say good things come in threes. Well, let's talk about a third Super Bowl for January 25th. This one took place in 1998 at Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego. Super Bowl 32 was a matchup of two legendary gunslinger QBs as Green Bay's Brett Favre took the field for the Packers and the Broncos had their signal caller John Elway, per a Washington Post article. Elway and company put on a late drive in the fourth. Running back Terrell Davis found Pedro with a one-yard touchdown with 1 minute and 45 seconds remaining, and it broke a 24-all tie. The Denver Broncos beat the Green Bay Packers 31-24, with Bronco running back Terrell Davis voted as the game's MVP after rushing for 157 yards and 3 TDs against one of the best NFL defenses that year. And we have January 25th, 2015, at the University of Phoenix, Glendale, Arizona. The NFL was trying some different things to make the stale Pro Bowl a bit more interesting to viewers. The NFL.com article described it as a second season that was used as an unconferenced format with players selected without regard to conference and voting by the fans, coaches, and players. The 2014 season's NFL Pro Bowl pitted a team coached by Michael Irvin to play a team of Pro Bowlers of Chris Carter. The Irvin squad won the game 32-28. The Pro Bowl MVPs were Houston's J.J. Watt and Detroit Lions quarterback Matthew Stafford. As we take a quick break from the headlines, let me remind you that you can also learn more about the gridiron history on our website, pigskindispatch.com. And you can contact me, Darren Hayes, at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Speaking of hearing from someone, here is one of my podcasting partners from the sportshistorynetwork.com that has a message for you.
Hi, folks. Are you curious about some of the unique players, teams, games, and events of pro football's past? If you are, please check out my bi-weekly podcast, The Pigskin Past. I'm Joe Zagorski, a member of the Pro Football Writers of America and the Pro Football Researchers Association. I've written 3 books about pro football history, and I'm currently writing my 4th. Now, my era of expertise is the 1970s in the NFL. Heck, I even have a Facebook page by that title, and my very first book also has the same title, The NFL in the 1970s. But every now and then I check out a different era, so I might surprise you. Anyway, if you like pro football history, please check out my bi-weekly segment here called The Pigskin Past when you get a chance. I think you'll enjoy it.
Now that's definitely something you'll want to check out. Now let's talk about some birthdays of this January 25th, and we'll start off in 1924, Martins Ferry, Ohio. Ohio State lineman and place kicker Lou the Toe Groza was born. We've talked quite a bit about Groza in our headlines over the past couple of months, especially when there were big games for the Cleveland Browns. In particular, the last second field goal that gave the Browns the 1950 NFL Championship comes to mind. The Hall of Fame states that Groza's career in the league lasted for 21 seasons. The first 12 he played as offensive tackle and kicked, while the last 9 he was just a kicking specialist only. The Toe was the last of the original Cleveland Browns to retire from the league. He made all NFL as a tackle 6 times and was the NFL Player of the Year in 1954. Lou scored 1,608 points in his 21 seasons played, with 4 in the AFC championships and 9 NFL title games. Lou Groza was enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in the year 1974. January 25th, 1935, Crosbytown, Texas. Don Maynard, the durable wide receiver from Texas Western, celebrated his birth. The Pro Football Hall of Fame quotes Maynard as saying that his record that he is most proud of is the fact that he was the first to achieve 10,000 yards receiving in an NFL career. The legendary wideout attributed the accomplishment of this feat by his playing longevity, which lasted for 15 seasons in the NFL. The Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined the gridiron feats of Don Maynard in 1987. January 25th, 1942. Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Carl Eller, the stud University of Minnesota tackle, arrived into this life. After a great 1963 season, Carl was a first-team choice on 8 of the 9 major All-America teams, just missing out on being a unanimous selection. The NFF tells us that Eller played both sides of the ball for the Gophers at tackle. The National Football Foundation selected Carl Eller's collegiate career to be honored in the College Football Hall of Fame in 2006. As a professional, he was moved exclusively to the defense after being selected in the first round of the NFL draft by the Minnesota Vikings. Eller became a fixture in one of the greatest defensive lines in history, the Vikings' famous Purple People Eaters, as he was teamed up with the great Jim Marshall. He played 16 seasons at DN for Minnesota, amassing 44 sacks per the Pro Football Hall of Fame. In 2004, Carl Eller received the great honor of being enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. January 25th, 1944, LaPorte, Texas. Michigan State's talented wideout, Gene Washington, celebrated his birth. The footballfoundation.org bio for Gene lists that Washington started as a sophomore. Washington would go on to set Michigan State records for wide receivers in receptions and yards. Gene is in rare company when he was a two-time first-team All-American. The Spartans teams that Gene was part of earned 2 shared national titles. The National Football Foundation selected Gene Washington for the Football Hall of Fame of college in year 2011. Gene was a first-round pick in the 1967 NFL draft by the Minnesota Vikings, who selected him 8th overall. He played 7 seasons in the NFL, both with Minnesota and with the Denver Broncos. His stat line shows that he caught 182 passes and 26 touchdowns as a pro. Washington was a 2-time Pro Bowler and was named as a first-team All-Pro in 1969. January 25th, 1985. The great linebacker from Mississippi, Patrick Willis, was born. The NFF tells us that Patrick won both the Buckus Award and the Jack Lambert Awards after the 2006 season at Ole Miss, recognizing him as one of the nation's top college linebackers, as well as being selected as a consensus first-team All-American. The National Football Foundation voters chose Patrick Willis to gain entrance into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2019. Willis was the 11th overall pick in the 2007 NFL draft by the San Francisco 49ers, where he played for 8 seasons. Patrick won the 2007 NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year and was a 7-time Pro Bowl selection. There were 2 different seasons where he led the NFL in tackles and won the Professional Butkus Award in the year 2009. We're so glad you took some time out of your day to join us once again, and we hope you come back tomorrow for January 26th football history headlines and shows beyond that, too. The best way to do that so you don't miss a thing is to hit your subscribe button on your podcast player right now. Go to your favorite podcast provider and tell them, hey, I want to subscribe to this Pigskin Daily History Dispatch podcast. Or you can email us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com and we'll send you a daily email on our email list to make sure you come up with as soon as the articles and the podcasts are released. You can also go to the sportshistorynetwork.com to see this podcast release episodes as well as many other. And right now we have 13 or 14 podcasts on there that are getting posted all the time on some great sports history topics with some great guests and some very talented hosts. So make sure you check that out at sportshistorynetwork.com. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Have you ever noticed that the lower jaw is not protected in sports? Did you know that 10,800 concussions will happen today? This has been an upward trend for the past 50 years. I'm Dr. Michael Hutchison, a practicing neuromuscular dentist. When my son wanted to participate in football and rugby, I was afraid he was going to get a concussion. That fear led me to finding the missing link to reducing concussions. The fact is, the only part of the skull that is not protected in sports is the lower jaw. If you want to drastically reduce concussions, there are three basic jaw positions that affect concussions, and two of them are not good. The correct one is called physiologic jaw position. It will dissipate the force away from the brain. Knowing that, I designed an appliance that put my son's jaw in the right place. And as a result, he was concussion-free from fifth grade all the way to senior year. This jaw position takes those 10,800 concussions today down to 28. It's the key to concussion protection. As a parent, this is what you need to know. It's extremely important that the device you are using is on the lower jaw. Thickness of the device is important. Most importantly, it must position and hold you in your own unique personal physiologic jaw position. So if your child goes out on the field with the correct jaw position, your son or daughter will not one of those 10,800 concussions today. Get yours today at PowerPlusMouthGuard.com. Use the promo code POWERUP2023 for 10% off.